Nice to. So I apologize.
Okay. There are two psukim that discuss Bal Yira Bal Yamaseh. And the first place to start, whenever you have psukim, sometimes you run right into the Gemara, you want to see what the Gemara says, what the Rishonim say, what Rashi says. Sometimes you have to sit back and read the pasuk and absorb what the pasuk says. When Rav Aaron Lichtenstein would give us Makoros for Shir Koli, when there was a pasuk, sometimes you're dealing with a Din de Rabbanan or Gzeira or some logic that's embedded. But when you're dealing with something that stems from a pasuk, the first five, six sources were all the pasuk, the Targum, the Rashi, the Sfarno, the Ramban, the context of the pasuk. So before we even started the Gemara and the analysis, we tried to take in the psukim. So a lot of times, just by reading the psukim, be able to absorb some of the issues that you'll then pursue when you're conducting the analysis. So let's start with pasuk number one. These are two psukim in Shmos. I wrote them in reverse order just because the first pasuk has many of the goodies and the second pasuk has less features to it. So it's in Shmos Yud Gimel. The Isser, of course, on Pesach, there were three Isserim. One Isser is eating chametz. One Isser is having hanah from chametz. It's Asur Bana. The third Isser, according to most Rishonim, is not owning chametz. There may be a fourth issue. There's one sheet that the Tanaim holds. You're not allowed to eat chametz she'avar lava pesach minatara. We pask in the chametz she'avar lava pesach zelamid rabbanon. When there are significant kulos about chametz she'avar lava pesach, there's zeraisa and maybe very, very much more machmir than chametz she'avar lava pesach. And if you look at the pasuk, the first pasuk, source number one, matzol siyachel eis shiva seyamim. So that's interesting that this pasuk mentions matzah alongside the Isser Rabbi Rabbi Yamatzah. It's not really our topic today, but from a literary standpoint, what's the relationship between the mitzvah of Achilas Matzah and the Isser Rabbi Rabbi Yamatzah? Not for now. Lo yirai lecha chametz, v'lo yirai lecha se'or, v'chol gvulecha. Lo yirai lecha chametz, lo yirai lecha se'or. So what do you see in this pasuk? The key word in the pasuk, which appears twice, actually the two key words, one is the word lecha. Lo yirai lecha, again, ignoring right now the difference between Se'or and Chametz. Right now, let's ignore that difference. There are some of the differences we'll see later. So from this, you'll see the Gemara is going to claim that Chametz, which isn't yours, you can see and you can have contact with, but the Isser Rabbi Rabbi Yamaseh surrounds the Lecha. If it's Chametz that we'll call Lecha, and classically we call Lecha Chametz, we own. Chametz we don't own Lecha. This may not be the classic case, but that's what our expectations would be. We know what Lecha is, things that I own. I could be Mekadosh or woman with it. I could be a Makdish for Hekdesh. I can sell. If I don't own it, then I can't perform halachic activities over them. And ownership is pretty clearly defined in the halachic system. That's one feature that leaps out at us from the first pasuk. The second feature that leaps out at you from the first pasuk is the word yeroeh. Lo yeroeh lecha chametz v'lo yeroeh lecha se'or. What does the word yeroeh mean? Why does the Torah use the word yeroeh? And in some ways, there's a tension between yeroeh and lecha. Lecha sounds very formal and legal. If I own it, I'm over. If I not own it, I'm not over. So it's all a question of ownership. I don't really care about the optics. I don't care about the visuals, whether I see it. What does the Torah mean when it says lo yeroeh, don't see it? If it's hidden, am I not violating the Isser? The answer to that is, of course, no. But why does the Torah write Yeraya? What is it coming to convey? Those are the two things that hit us in this pasuk. The third issue, which isn't repeated twice, the third issue is when the Torah describes where the chametz that you shouldn't see, that you own, should be, the Torah says, Bechol Gvulecha, the end of the first pasuk, anywhere you own. Not just your house, but any place you own. So there, it's an expansive Isser. Any place that you have chametz, you're violating the Isser, as long as it conforms to the two criteria of Yera'eh and Lecha. So on the one end, there's an expansion, Bechol Gevulcha, this is a pasuk that stretches the Isser. On the other end, there's a contraction, only Lecha, and only if it fits the parameters of Yera'eh. If we look at the second pasuk, you also have this internal clash. On the one hand, the pasuk says, Shivas Yamim Se'or Lo Yimatzeh, keyword, yimatzeh, what word is missing here? Lecha. The word lecha doesn't appear. Yimatzeh means any chametz that's found. So on the one hand, it steps down from lecha, doesn't have to be lecha, it can only be yimatzeh. On the other hand, it brought in ziyeraeh, doesn't have to be seen, it could be found. So it's right in the middle between lecha and yeraeh. Yeraeh, the class of yeraeh is very, very, very limited, only chametz you see. Lecha is much more expensive, chametz you own. Yimatzeh is somewhere in the middle. It doesn't talk about ownership, but it does reduce or relax the requirement to actually see the chametz in terms of defining the Isser. And then when it describes the location of the chametz, it says bivatechem, which would give you the impression that Only if it's in your house, not if it's anywhere else, not if it's not in your house. Remember, the previous pasuk talked about b'chol gvulacha, anywhere. Here it sounds like only if it's in your house. So we'll see. The Gemara may or may not accept these differences. When we get to the Gemara a little bit later, I'm just trying to see if I gave you the Gemara. I don't think I put down this Gemara, the Makaris. Maybe I'll quote the Gemara by heart a little bit later. But these are two psukim, and the two psukim give different indications about the Isser. But it's hard to even see one pasuk as more X and one pasuk as more Y. Oh, this pasuk is more inclusive, this pasuk is more narrow and confining. Because they each have elements to that they're extending and elements that are confining. The first pasuk's extension is, it can be b'chol gvulecha. But it has to be something which is yera'a and lecha. And yera'a and lecha themselves are different. Whereas the other pasuk says, well, it has to be b'vateichem, but it could be yimatzeh. It doesn't have to be lecha. But it doesn't have to be yera'a. So this is the Isser of Bayi Rabbi Yimatzeh that we're going to start to talk about. Right now, for the first part of this year, we're not going to address the differences between the psukim. We'll get to those a little bit later, but let's take these two psukim together. You'll see why I'm saying that, because when we get to the continuation of the shir, probably not today, you'll see the Gemara may collapse the two psukim into one. It's called Litein Esa Amr Shulzeh Bishulzeh Bishulzeh Bishulzeh. If you learned the Gemara in the morning Seder, you may remember, it's on Hayamid Beis, that we may just fold the two psukim into each other and ignore the differences between the two, make believe they're one pasuk. So let's make believe they're one pasuk. After we make believe they're one pasuk, we'll see where maybe they are separate psukim. But let's, for the meantime, make believe that they're one pasuk. How do you define the Isser? So the Gemara starts to define the Isser. Let's see source number 3 with a little bit of an addition from source number 5. Remember, this is Hayamid Beis, just because you don't have the Gemara in front of you, but those of you who learned Perek Rishon, I'm sure you saw this Gemara. This is right dab smack in the middle of Perek Rishon. So Gemara says as follows, Tana Rabbanan, Shivas Yamim, source number 3, Seor lo yim matzei bevatechem, mal talmud lomar. What's this pasuk adding? Line number 2, source 3. Halo kvar ne'amar lo yira'a lecha se'or v'lo yira'a lecha chametz b'chol gvulecha. So I already have a pasuk that tells me it's aser. Why do I need this second pasuk? So wait, it's not the second pasuk, it's the first pasuk. But the Gemara assumes that the pasuk of lo yira'a lecha chametz v'lo yira'a lecha se'or would be sufficient because it has most of the, excuse the pun, the ingredients. It has chametz, it has se'or, it has lecha, it has yira'a, it has gvulecha. So if I'm looking for the pasuk that's most comprehensive, it's actually the first pasuk that I quoted for you, which is the second pasuk sequentially. So the Gemara says, why would I need the pasuk of Yimatzeh? If I already have the pasuk of Lo Yira'a Lecha. So the Gemara says, Lefisha Namar, line number 3, source 3, Lo Yira'a Lecha Se'or, Shelcha Yataroha, Avala Taroha Shelachair Mishal Gavoa. If I just had the pasuk of Lo Yira'a Lecha Se'or, I'd have a very confined set of parameters for the Isser. If you own it, you violate the Isser. If you don't own it, you don't violate the Isser. And therefore, things you don't own, like Hekdesh, or it's chametz of other people, you don't violate the Isser. So if I just had the word Lecha, then the Isser would be very, very narrow, and it would be limited only to legal ownership. Yachol Yatmin, line number 4, source 3. We'll ignore the word Yatmin for a second, hiding chametz. But Yachol Yekabel Pikdonos Min HaNachri. But what happens if I don't own the chametz, but I'm watching the chametz? Do I violate Bayi Rav HaChametz that I'm watching? That I wouldn't know from the first pasuk, because the first pasuk is characterized by Lecha, and Chametz that I'm watching is not Lecha. Talmud Lomar, line number 4, source 3, Lo Yimatzeh. So look at my hands. Yimatzeh is stretching the parameters of the Isser beyond the narrow confines of Lecha. There is a scenario in which when I'm mekabel a pikadon from a non-Jew, if I'm mekabel a pikadon from a Jew, we'll talk about that as we get to the depths of the sugya. It's a very deep sugya. Well, then that Jew may violate the Isser. So Gemara is looking for a binary case where the owner doesn't violate the Isser, the original owner, because he's a guy, she's a guy. Now, do I violate the Isser when I accept achrayos and I watch the pikadon as one of the shomrim for the guy? You would think not, because it's not lecha. I don't have any bailus. Talmud lomar, yimatzeh. That second pasuk, which is really the first pasuk sequentially, but on our makaris, it's the second pasuk, that even though it's not yours, if you're responsible to watch the chametz, it's yimatzeh. And you violate the Isser. And the Gemara elaborates just a little bit later. Now it's source 5. I split the Gemara for you. It's a continuation of the Gemara. The Gemara says source 5. Amar Mar, we said before, so this is a continuation of the Gemara, source 5. Yachol Yatmin v'yikaba pekdonis ben anachrim, Talmud Lomar lo yimatzeh. Lo yimatzeh tells that you cannot watch it because of a guy. Hamrit Reisha, what do you mean? You just said before, Shalchaya Taro. You can't have your chametz, Avala Taro Shalchem Shal Gavah. So how can you tell me I can't keep it pikadin of a guy and I'm violating Baal Yerav? It's not lecha. So Gemara creates the distinction which I intuited or I suggested before, indicated before. Line number 3, source 5. Ha, the kabbal alech rayas. Ha, the lo kabbal alech rayas. If I'm watching the pikadin of a guy and I'm responsible to pay, then I'm a shomer and I violate Baal Yerav even though I don't own the chametz. If I'm not mekabel achrayis, I'm just, you know, keep your chametz in my house, put it down somewhere. I'm not responsible for the chametz. I'm not violating Baal Yerav, Baal Yimaseh. This is our first question. Evidently, again, right now we're assuming there's one big glob, one big isser. The two psukim are conflated into one. That's why I'm calling them Baal Yerav, Baal Yimaseh. After we build some of our logic, we'll talk about some of the differences between those two isserim. But for now, let's assume it's one big isser. Baal Yerav, Baal Yimaseh, Lo Yerav Lecha Chametz, Lo Yerav Lecha Sa'ar, Shivas Yamim Sa'ar, Leim Aseh Bevateichem. We're stretching the Isser beyond ownership. You violate Chametz, not just based on Chametz you own, but Chametz you don't own, but you're responsible for. Remember, one of the basic 5 rules of Lamdas is, scope reflects essence. The scope of Halacha shows you what the essence of Halacha is. It's true in everything in life. Let's say, all of a sudden, I brought 10 boys into the shiur now. So that scope of this set, called the people in this room, would change the nature of the shiur. I brought 5, I don't know, whatever. If you brought 5 girls from different midrashim. Anytime you change the scope, you're changing the essence. So now the scope of Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh includes not just chametz that I own, but chametz that I'm watching for a guy. That's mekabel achrayus. What is that? So there are 2 ways to phrase it. And this is going to be our question. Why do I violate Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh for chametz that I don't own, but I'm a kabbal achrayis? Okay? And I'll give you a second tool. Listen to my sentence and break it down into 2 options based on the clauses in my sentence. Why do you violate Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh based on chametz, which is a pikadon that you're responsible for? Pikadon means an object that you're watching. It's either a chiddush in the way we understand, or a chiddush in the way we understand fill in the blanks. I'll say it again now. I violate Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh for chametz that I'm a shomer on. It's either a chiddush in how I understand Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh, or a chiddush in how I understand. Take the other clause of the sentence. Hashem. Every halach in Shas is a conjugation of 2 factors. And the axis, the logical axis upon which the halacha spins, can be either one, but not necessarily both of those halachas. That's what makes Shas so elastic and supple, because it can always be flexed based on the 2 factors. Chazal never sat down and said, let's talk about Kiddushin. He said, let's talk about Kiddushin through Chalipin. Can you even Kiddush a woman through Chalipin? Chazal didn't talk about the DNA of Shomer. They said, will a Shomer be chayiv in Baal Yerav Yimaseh for the chametz he's watching? Every halacha is an intersection of 2 roads. Imagine just an intersection. And you're standing in that intersection, and you want to know the halacha that lies at this intersection, these 2 halachos, which of the roads that feed it, that feed this intersection, are responsible for propelling or creating the halacha. So every time you have a halachic or an atomized halachic statement, just dissect the sentence into 2 elements, and you'll have the 2 access points upon which the sugya can revolve. So now I'll say it again. The chiddush that you violate Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh for a chametz upon which you're a shomer is either a chiddush in how we understand Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh or a chiddush in how you understand shomer. So just knowing, sometimes it's the terminology that hits you again and again and again, it can help you build the structure. Every sugya is different, the logic is different, but so much of Shas is just structurizing your thought. Not just thinking aimlessly and chaotically, but okay, now I'm going to think about it from this angle. I'm going to think about it from this angle. Of course, a lot more, many, 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 many more tools, but these are some of your initial guideposts to help you build the sugya. So one way to view this sugya is to say, look, in order to violate Baal Yerav Baal Yimaseh, you have to own the chametz. The chiddush, the big chiddush in Psachim, the famine base is, you can own chametz different ways. You can own chametz in the classic way. You purchase the chametz in a store, or you made it. You can own chametz in a different way. The fact that you're mekabel achrayus gives you partial ownership. Maybe this sugya in Pesachim, Ham and Beis, helps us comprehend what halachic ownership is based on. What is halacha? What is, or said in a more lumdus sounding way, what is the halachic definition of bailus? What does it mean to have bailus? And one of the ways to test that is to look at the margins. Regular bailus, you don't really know, it has everything. You have to look at marginal cases. Travel along the spectrum, look at extreme cases. Well, would you be a Baal even in this case? Would you be a Baal even in this case? Would you be a Baal even in this case? And that helps you define things. So you always look at the poles, because logic is much clearer at the poles, and then you move back to the middle point and say, well, this reflects. If even this is called bailus, then even normal bailus is maybe not based on, let's say, utility, but based on responsibility. Is there a world in which responsibility for something makes me a Baal? Said differently, what happens if your car gets hit by lightning? No fault damage. Who's responsible? Said otherwise, who pays for it? The answer is, you do. If you don't have insurance, that insurance means we share risk. When in the absence of insurance, you pay for it. Which means part of bailus is responsibility. If you're responsible, you're the Baal. Think about other areas in Shas where you're responsible no matter what, like a ganav. If I steal something and it gets damaged, maybe that makes a ganav into a partial Baal. So it's the big takeaway from the Gemara in Pesachim. You know why Shomer is chayiv in Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh for chametz he doesn't own? You know what? You got it wrong. He owns it. The second you take responsibility, you own it. In which case, listen to me a little differently, Pesachim Hey, this chiddush is not a localized chiddush about Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh, it's a global chiddush about ownership, which happens to manifest itself through the prism of Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh. What Chazal really intended through this drasha, or what HaKadosh Baruch Hu intended by creating this wide scope disser, is not to change the dynamics of Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh, but to help us better cluster in our heads or assemble in our heads what the parameters of bailus is. If you violate Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh for chametz that you don't really own, but you accept the chayes, evidently you really own it. The other approach is to say, no. It's not a chiddush in ownership. Finish the sentence. It's a chiddush in Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh. The chiddush evidently is that Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh isn't based on ownership. It's based on, I'll give you an English word, affiliation. Chametz that you are affiliated with, you violate Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh. How did Hashem create the Isser? Is this Isser driven by ownership? You violate Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh for owning chametz? Or is this Isser driven by affiliation? Chametz you're associated with, you violate Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh. Does everyone see, stop for a minute and think, this is already a catapult to a deeper world of machshava. When people say, how do you get from lamdas to machshava? Once you atomize and define your concepts, then you start thinking, well, why would Hashem define it this way? And why would Hashem define it this way? What does Hashem think about chametz and my relationship to chametz, that its definition of the issur should be streamed through legal factors, or as opposed to experiential factors, associative factors? But let's just first try to define it before we leap up to the level of philosophy and conceptualization. The issur of Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh is not ownership. The issur of Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh is association. Now, if I own something, I'm associated with it. But you know what? Even if I don't own it, I'm still associated with it. It's still something that's part of my world if I accept the chayes. If I don't accept the chayes, I don't really care. Just put it in my house. If I accept the chayes, I have an interest. I think about it. I worry about it. Just make sure it doesn't get damaged. Said otherwise, girls, maybe that's what the Torah is telling me. If I just had the pasuk of lo yirah lecha chametz, lo yirah lecha sor, the first pasuk, I would have defined Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh in monetary terms. But you know what? The Torah changes the script on me. What does the second pasuk say? Not lecha. What's the second pasuk that expands Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh? What's the key word? Yamaseh. Anything that's matzvei. Anything that's found, that's associated, it's part of my world, part of my orbit, part of my radius. Now, obviously, we prefer that second shot because it fits with the word matzvei better. The word matzvei sounds like it's giving me an internal Baal Yirah Baal Yamaseh stretcher rather than just redefining bailus for me. So it's better to learn the second shot, but not every Rishon is going to learn the second shot because there's going to be other factors and other sources that may force us to take a different direction. But all of a sudden here we have our question. If I just had Lecha, I would have been stuck in a very narrowly confined Isser. I own it, I violate it. I don't own it, I don't violate it. Now the Torah gives me Yamaseh, and it stretches the Isser to Pikadon, to Shomer. Is that stretching the parameters of bailus? You own it even if you're Shomer? or stretching the parameters of by Rabbi Amasa, that you can violate the Issa even without ownership, just based on association, associative. That's our question. Now here we have two Gemaras that are very uncommon. Most sugyos, that's all the Gemara says, and then you've got to dive into the Rishonim and look for applications and differences and consequences, which we call nafkaminos, and then reverse engineer. Well, this Rishon says this nafkaminos because he had the following model in mind, and that led to his conclusion. And the Rishon differed from him. He had a different model in mind. He was led to a different conclusion. But here we have two Gemaras that help us at least articulate and sharpen this issue. One is a general Gemara having nothing to do with Bali Yamatze, but highlighting a unique idiosyncrasy of Chametz that just reflects to us this question. And then we have a Gemara that is a, that's what I'm looking for, is a rehashing of this Isser, but with language that may, it's an ambivalent language, but may help us at least remind ourselves that this is really the question we're looking for. So nothing here is going to be conclusive, because we're going to have two strange letters, and we'll talk about those letters, but at least we'll see this question coming to the fore. Okay, so let me first introduce the letter, then we'll see the two Gemaras. The most intriguing letter in Lamdas, in the Hebrew language, when I say letter, I mean A, B, C, D in Hebrew language, is the word kaf. In Hebrew, it's called a kafa de mayon, and we've talked about this a little bit before. A kafa de mayon can be a very, very tight association. This cup is like this cup. Okay, they're both cups, they both hold liquid, and there's slight differences, or else I won't compare them, right? I won't say this cup is like itself, but it's a very tight. Or I can say this cup is like this magic mark. Okay, that's a very loose association. What do I mean? They're both things that I use in shiur for props, or they're both cylindrical or whatever. They both have color associated with them. So it's very, very loose. It's functionality, not necessarily identity. So this cup, like this cup, is identity. They're both identified as a cup. This cup and this marker are functionally similar, but not exactly the same. So whenever you see a kaf in halacha, you want to ask yourself that question. So for example, the most famous case that I always quote, I'll give you two famous cases. I think we even talked about it earlier this year. Shomea Keona, did I talk about it with you? So when I say Shomea Keona, does it mean that when I listen to a bracha, it's like I actually said it? Listening is a form of communication. Communication is not just lip movement, but it's ear and processing. Or it means that there are two ways to be out, say, the bracha. One of Yotze Bracha is to say it. One way is Shomea, but it's a loose cuff. It doesn't mean Shomea Keone. It just means that just like functionally, halachically, I can fulfill my responsibility by saying, I can fulfill my responsibility by listening. The Machlokas Rashi and tells us in Brachos, if I'm in the middle of Shmon Esrei and the Tzibur gets up to Kedusha, should I stop and listen and try to get Kedusha through the magic of Shomea Keone? Or be a hafzik, because Shomea Keone Mamish, it's like you're talking in the middle of Shmon Esrei, and you, Dafka, should not think about Kedusha or Kaddish in the middle of Shmon Esrei. I actually had this year. I had a crash in my mind this year. It was so annoying because I really enjoy the Megillah. I don't want to be distracted in the Megillah. But my son was in Yerushalayim for Shabbos, and he was running back quickly to hear the Megillah. And he came running in last minute into the base matters to hear the Megillah with me. So I was helping him get a Megillah to listen. And he didn't really bring a Megillah for him, so he was looking for a Tanakh. And then the Chazan started to recite the bracha, and you have to be quiet for the bracha and be quiet for the Megillah. And unintentionally, as he was in the middle of the bracha, I turned to my son and said, oh, look in with me in my Megillah, because I had a cloth Megillah, look in with me. So I was mafsig in the middle of the bracha. So I had a question, can you be yotze a bracha that you heard from someone else if you're mafsig? Can I apply Shomea Keona to a bracha you're making if I'm speaking while you're making the bracha? And I thought to myself, very quickly, because I want to hear the Megillah and not get lost in Lamdas, because Lamdas gets very tantalizing and get lost in it, that could be the Machlokas Rashi tells us. If Shomea Keona means my listening is like I'm saying a bracha, but I'm being mafsik in my bracha, while I'm saying, Baruch Atah Hashem, Mashiach Kedushan, I'm saying, here, look in with me. Whereas if Shomea is not Keona, it's just my listening is like I'm Yotze, so I'm listening and I'm grabbing a tramp or a hitchhike on your bracha. So if I'm speaking, that may not disrupt or interrupt the bracha. Anyway, I didn't recite my own bracha because the bracha is not makiv anyway. So right, you could be Yotze Mrs. Megillah without the bracha. Just as a warning, I'm sure we're going to have shiurim about this, and I'm sure we'll meet before Pesach, but it's a common mistake, and don't make the mistake. I think I told you about it before. Oh, I missed a night of Svira, I'm out. You didn't miss a night of Svira, you're not out, you still fulfill the mitzvah. Because of a safek, you just don't recite a bracha. But don't get caught into the space where if you don't say the bracha, you're not yotze the mitzvah. Mitzvahs are mitzvahs, brachos are einu makvos, say brachos, have kavanah when you say brachos, but we're makbid not to say a bracha because of some sheet of a tosas and Megillah Daf Chaf. But going through the overwhelming majority of Rishonim, you're still yotze the mitzvah. So if you forgot a night, you're still being mekayim the mitzvah of Svira Somer, just without a bracha. So I possibly was Makai in the mitzvah of Kriyas Megillah this year, just without the bracha, if my slight, again, there's a second side to the question, that my hefsek wasn't really a hefsek she'ena letzarech mitzvah, it was a hefsek letzarech mitzvah. I wasn't saying here, I'll see you at home and we'll play basketball. I was saying, look in my Megillah with me. So as a hefsek letzarech mitzvah in the middle of a bracha that you're being yosef shemek alunah, is that a hefsek in the bracha? I tried very hard not to think about that during the Megillah. There's no one to draw the Megillah. You don't make the bracha. I still was out to the Megillah. But that was going through my head for like a second, the Rashi tells us. Or another question, a famous question, Shlucho Shel Adam, Kimosa. When I make you a shliach to marry a woman for me, to divorce a woman, to buy something, to makdis something, any halacha, that I can make you a shliach. Shlucho Shel Adam, Kimosa. Doesn't mean that you become me, literally, and you're in charge of running this entire halachic process, and you can make decisions, and you become empowered. Or, just like if I were to put the money to the woman's hand, she'd be my wife. So you're just basically an errand runner. You're just putting money into someone's hands, but I'm still running it from behind. But you're not really me. But I can be a kaddish woman or sell an object, whatever, through your physical delivery of money, the same way I could do it through my own physical delivery of money. How literally do we take Shul Shalom Kamaso? A million different afkaminas. Trust me. A million different afkaminas. For example, just an easy one. Let's say I make Reuven, my shliach, to divorce my wife. Again, we use that because it's a very, very, composite halacha with a lot of elements to it. So I make Reuven a shliach, the person makes shliach to divorce his wife. Who should pay for the paper? Okay, again, these are not halacha questions. These are conceptualizations. Because the paper has to be paid for by the megaresh, by the person conducting the gerushin, not the sofer. So, or for that matter, let's say Reuven makes Shimon a shliach to marry a wife for him. Can Shimon marry a wife for Reuven as a shliach for Reuven by using Shimon's own money? Or does Shimon have to use Reuven's money? So if Shimon is just an errand boy, then he's just a puppet who is performing an action. He's got to take Reuven's money and put it into the woman's hand as if Reuven's doing it. But he's not really Reuven. He's just like an extension. He's a puppet. He's a Pinocchio. But if Shimon has not become the guy in charge, he's like Reuven, so he can conduct the whole ceremony, he can make decisions, he can make changes. Again, in the end, it's going to bring this whole halachic benefit back to Reuven, or halachic consequence back to Reuven. So anytime you see something of a kuf, or something equivalent to a kuf, you want to ask that question. Here we have something equivalent to a kuf. So let's see the Gemara. Okay, as I told you, beware, the Gemara is not talking about this whole question of pikadon. We'll get back to pikadon. The Gemara is talking, listen carefully, about the global issue of Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh. And the Gemara uncovers an interesting halachic black hole. Right? Interesting, a black hole is like a mystery of the universe that doesn't work. An inconsistency in the system. What do you mean? On the one hand, there's an Isra Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh for regular standard chametz. Not chametz you don't own that you accepted obligations and responsibilities. Chametz you own, your regular chametz. The chametz you bought a day before Pesach that's in your cupboard. On the other hand, now listen carefully, anything that you can't get benefit from, you don't really own, because part of ownership in halacha is utility. So, on the one hand, I violate Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh for quote-unquote, air quotes, owning chametz. On the other hand, I can't really own chametz because I can't get any benefit from chametz. So how can I ever violate Bal Yirah Bal Yematzeh, even in the normal case? Forget pikadon. It's an oxymoron. There are two isurim that clash with each other. There's an Isser Hana'a, which bans utility. Once I don't have utility, I don't own it. If I don't own it, then I don't buy Rabbi Yematzeh. So there can never be both an Isser Hana'a and buy Rabbi Yematzeh living side by side in the halachic atmosphere, halachic universe. So let's see the Gemara. It's really a fascinating Gemara, and you'll see these two ideas emerging. It's a Gemara in source number 4. It appears in Psachim Davav, and it appears in Bava Kamma, because it talks about two riddles in halacha. One riddle is chametz. The other riddle, which is also an interesting riddle, is a boar. Why is boar such a riddle? Because normally, I am responsible to pay for damages my objects perform or inflict, and we call that niske mamon, and that's the topic of Bava Kamma. So if my animal gores, or my animal eats, or my animal crushes, or my fire devours, whatever it is, I'm chayiv. Why should I be obligated to cover damages that my boar causes? I don't own the Rishas Sarabim. A. B, it's a hole. I can't own space. So why should they be chayef for bor? So bor and chametz are these two halachic enigmas, where you can't really own something, yet you're treated as if you own it. In bor, you treat it as if you own it, you pay for it, if it's damages. In chametz, you're treated as if you own it because you're violated by Rabbi Yamatzeh. So now, given that introduction, let's see the Gemara, and we'll see two ways to read this Gemara. Okay? Source number four. It's a very famous Gemara. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Just wait a second. It's a beautiful Gemara. Just take 1 second. Just take 1 second. You can't miss. Amar Rabbi Elazar. Shnei Devarim. Tisha, okay? Shnei Devarim. Come on, look. It's such a beautiful Gemara. Shnei Devarim. Einan Bershusel Shel Adam. There are two things that you don't own in the classic legal parameters. Ebor and Chametz. Okay, here's the key word. Look at these four words. This is an expanded cuff. The as on hakasav, Hashem defined them ki'ilu birshusa. Okay? Girls, how many of you are making aliyah? Not making aliyah. Okay, so for the natural Israelis, if I had one request from your generation, it would be stop saying the word ki'ilu in every sentence. Stop it.
I agree.
You will be healthier. Your communication will be more direct and more impactful. Or translate into English, stop saying the word like. Work at it now, girls. I promise you, you'll thank me. You'll hunt me down one day. I'll be an old man somewhere. You'll say, Rabbi Tarragon, thank you. My boss says I'm a great communicator. My husband says I'm a great communicator. My students say I'm a good communicator because I don't have dead words. I can give you a list of 50 dead words, but start with that. You're just ruining your sentences. Like. Just work. Promise me you'll work hard at it. Take out the word ke'ilu. Take out the word like. It's deadening your sentences. It's ruining conversation. I can't listen to people sometimes. And even when I do listen, the whole sentence becomes diluted and the message becomes wavering. And please, work hard. But in this Gemara, you should say the word ke'ilu. The asan hakasov ki'ilu hein bershusa. You don't own chametz in the classic way. You don't own a bar in the classic way. And yet the Torah superimposed halachos that are normally a function of bailus, namely by Rabbi Yamatzeh and liability for the bar. Shnei Devarim, see the Gemara, famous Gemara. Shnei Devarim, source number four, eino bershusa shalatam. The asan hakasov ki'ilu bershusa. Eilu hein. Bar b'shusha rabim, v'chametz mi'sheish shaos ulamala. Chametz after chatzos, whenever Pesach, which is Asar, minatar. Chametz mi'sheish shaos ulamala. According to some Mishnah. Now, there are two ways to understand this Gemara. And that's why Chazal intentionally wrote this ki'ilu b'shusha to invite both ways. The strict way to say ki'ilu is, you're right, you don't own it. If I were to hold up, look at me, I'm holding a bor to the classic yardstick of violence, not, don't own it. Hashem says, you know what? Tough luck, you own it. Hashem creates a separate tract of ownership that deviates from the normal standard parameters and yardsticks of ownership. You own a bar, even though if it were some other hole, you know, I don't know, in your living room or something, you wouldn't own it. But when you dig a bar, it's just a rabim, it's just a hole, it's just a rabim, you own it, and you pay for it because you're liable. And you know what, chametz? Look at this chametz. You don't own it. Because things you don't have utility, you don't own. If it's libations for Avodah Zarah, you don't own it. If it's Bas or B'chalav, you can't have utility, Sabrana, you don't own it. If it's Avodah Zarah, you don't own it. If it's Kelayim, they go through all these Sirena, you don't own it. Chametz is Sirena. I hold it up to the light and I try to inspect the base and balas, you don't own it. So this is tough luck. You own the Chametz, you own the Chametz, everybody, Rabbi Maseh. So Hashem takes two items that don't conform to the normal standards of ownership. Hashem creates virtual ownership, para ownership, in order to create two halachas, liability for bor and liability for Rabbi Yamatzeh. That's a strict way. Kilo hein b'shusa. I own it, but not based on the normal standards, based on a Kodesh Baruch Hu's extra legal ownership. Or, what Hashem is telling us, you don't own chametz. And you know what? You still violate Bar Rabbi Yamatzeh. Because Bar Rabbi Yamatzeh is not a function of ownership, it's a function of association. Even chametz that I own, I don't really own. It's not as if, oh, normal chametz I can violate by Rabbi Moshe because of the ownership. It's only chametz that I accept the chrais for, there I violate only because of this. No, all chametz is associative. Because even chametz that I own, I don't really own once Pesach hits because it's Asur Bana. And once Asur Bana, I can't really own it. So the entire heart and soul of by Rabbi Moshe is based on association. And similar by bor, just to fill you in, if you want to learn about a comma one day, the same thing with bor. I don't really own a bar, and yet even though I don't own a bar, I could be liable for a bar based on whatever. We're not going to discuss Bava Kamma right now. So this question, how did Sam buy Rabbi Matze? And this surprise, oh my goodness, is buy Rabbi Matze for Pekadon? It's reflective of a larger issue, which you don't often have. Normally the larger issue is black and white, there's halacha, and then you have an extension of the halacha, and you want to see two ways to understand the extension. But here, the extension of buy Rabbi Matze to something that I'm watching, not something I'm owning, we roll it back and say, even chametz that I quote unquote own, maybe I violate, not because of the ownership, because of the association, because I can't really own it. So this is a bit of a unique halacha. Don't expect this to happen in too many sikkos. Here you have it, but I just want you to see how to trace it backwards, how to, a lot of halacha is zooming in, zooming out. A lot of lumbs. Okay, any coders there? Any people like to code? You like to code? Right? So study coding, because what's coding? Coding is a balance between macro and micro analysis. Right? When you write a code, the code could be 500,000 lines long, and you have to understand how 20,000 lines feed another 20,000 lines, 20,000 lines, you have to have macro structure. They have to make sure that every sentence is written properly. I remember once, so I was coding in college, this goes back to a long, 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 long time ago, on a really ugly green screen with letters that weren't really clear to see. And I was there in a computer room. We didn't have laptops. We had a computer room that you sat in. And I was sitting there and hurrying and working, and I just couldn't get the program to work. And I was compiling again and again. Compiling means you put the program through its tests. Again and again and again. I just couldn't get it to work. I just didn't know. Hours and hours for the life of me what I did wrong. Finally, it's one of the lines in my code. It's called setting your variables. In the beginning of the code, I wrote x equals 10, which means every time you use the word x in the code, it means 10. But I mistakenly wrote x equals 1, 0, as opposed to 10, capital 0. Okay? And in those days, the screens were so blurry that it was hard to tell the difference between a capital O and a 0. Go today on your computer and write 10 and then write 1, capital O. You see, it's much clearer because the resolution is sharper. In those days, the 0 had a line through it, maybe even they don't have it today, and the capital O didn't. But with the green, blurry screen, I couldn't see. So here I had thousands and thousands of lines of code that I'd written, and it was all falling apart because one letter had been written that seemed to me, computers are the dumbest things around, obviously. So for a computer, computers say, oh, you know, it probably means 10 as opposed to, oh, computer doesn't know that. You know, for a computer, one capital O was like 5 million. It means nothing to it because it just doesn't have the 10. And then you have to think about the macro. So much of Shas is zooming in, zooming out. Macro, micro. Macro analysis, micro analysis. So sometimes you have that macro. Wait a second. We're not just talking about a halacha that gets extended to Achrayos and we want to know why you're chayef Achrayos. We're talking about the DNA of Bayer Abaye Matze. Why should Bayer Abaye Matze even be a thing? Because there's a parallel issur of Hana, and once you can't get Hana, you don't own it. Once you don't own it, and maybe Hashem's chiddush was, you know what, you don't own chametz, and too bad. You're a buyer of Yamatze because you're associated with chametz because you once owned it, even though you don't have utility. If let's say I wanted to go marry a woman with chametz on Pesach, right, I want to marry a woman in an usher way, it wouldn't work. I don't own the Pesach. I don't own the chametz. But yet I violate buyer of Yamatze because buyer of Yamatze isn't a function of ownership. Okay? This same ambivalent or ambiguous language appears in another Gemara, but this Gemara is much more localized. Not about Bai Rabbi Matze in the classic context, but about Bai Rabbi Matze in one of the extended cases of Pekadon. Let's see that, and we'll have one nafkamina, and then I'll let you go, and we'll continue this next one. Okay? This is going to be an important Gemara. We're not going to see this so much today, but very often, Shas doesn't just provide conceptualizations, but real cases. Rod did this, Shmuel did this, he did this. So it's a nice interplay from a literary standpoint between concepts and cases that really happened. So here's the case that really happened. Rava, who was associated with the town of Mechoza, right? So Rava was in Mechoza as the Rosh Hashiva. Abaye was in Pumbedisa. These are towns in Iraq, Babylonia. Right? We call it Babylonia. Of course, it was really Persia. Babylonia didn't really exist in the 3rd century. You know what? Say, I'm going to Babylonia. What are you talking about? There's a city called Babylon, but Babylonia as an empire didn't exist. We call it Babel, but it's like a Jewish name for it. Oh, it was Buffa. Yes, any person on the street, not on the street, on the dirt street in those days. Where you go, it's Persia. They lived in Persia, the same Persia, Mordechai and Esther. It was this empire that extended into the early part of the first millennia. Okay? So Rava was in Mechoza, line number 4, source 5. Kiha. The Gemara is quoting a parallel to show that you violate Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzeh, even though you don't own the chametz, as long as you've accepted achrayus for the chametz. Kiha, Kiha, line number 4. The Amar Lehu Rava Livnei Mechoza. Rava told the people in his town Mechoza, line 4, source 5, Bi'iru Chamira Dibinei Chayala Mibataychu. Okay? There was some minhag in Mechoza that the Persian army forced the Jews to feed them. Now, it's not clear how they forced us to feed them. That's going to be a machlagus in Rishonim, which we'll see. But it sounds like, at least a simple reading, is that they brought their wheat and their food and their cattle, and they put it in your house, and they said, feed us, cook for us. And if you didn't cook for them and bake for them, you'd get punished. And if something happened to the food material and the resources that they brought, you'd be obligated to pay. So effectively, you were shomer on the food that they put in your house. Now, some of you are going to disagree with this. We'll see this a little bit later. But that seems to be the basic setup. Ki hada amar rava, livnei mechuza, bi'iru, destroy. Kol chamira hodikam shuza, bi'iru, destroy. Chamira de b'nei chayala, the chametz of the soldiers. It's their chametz, it sounds like. Get rid of it before Pesach, even though it's going to cause you complications, but you have to get rid of it. You don't have a choice. Bi'iru chamira de b'nei chayala mi bataychu. Kivan, line number 5. Di'ilu migna v'ilu mitvit. If this chametz gets stolen or lost, you would have to pay back the Persian soldiers, even though you didn't agree to it, presumably. Here's the key word, line number 6, first word on the line. Kidilchon dami. Kidilchon is Aramaic for it's like it's yours. So this is chametz you don't own, because it's the Persian's chametz, but you're responsible for if it gets lost. And Rabbi says it's a buy, Rabbi, I must say, because it's like yours. Here's our question. What was Rava saying by Kigdilchon? Didn't he mean to say that since you're responsible for it, it's like you own it, because responsibility equals ownership. Kigdilchon in the tight way, it's like you own it. Or did Rava mean to say, you don't own this chametz, but since you're responsible for it, you're worrying about it, you're associated with it, it's part of your world, you think about it, and therefore you're violated by Rabbi Masseh, even in the absence of ownership. So our question of how to understand by Rabbi Masseh is literally latent in the words Rava used. And this is read historiographically, could be that Rava actually intentionally used an ambiguous phrase to support the phrase. Obviously, Rava felt one way, but other Amorim felt another way. So when Rava said it, he could have said a word that would have invited both ways, even though if you interviewed Rava, what do you think? Is Bali Rabbi Masseh a function of ownership, and you just happen to own things you are obligated to watch? Is Bali Rabbi Masseh a function of association, and even if you're don't really own it? And Rava had a particular opinion, but he used the language that would have incorporated multiple because he was so dexterous in language. That's a ready historiographical question. Okay, Rava held one thing. There's Abaya, there's Rav Yosef, there's Rav Papa, there's Rav Ashias. We'll see that we've shown and many other people that may not have held the model of Rava. Okay, so this is our question. I'll put the question up on the board. I'll put the things we've seen. So if I was just talking about one Nafka Mina, then we'll pick it up next week. Okay, when we describe the Isser of Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzeh, that's the way it appears in Sarim. Beis Yud, Beis Yud. It's not Bivi. It's Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzeh. Baal Yirah, Baal Yimatzeh. Is it a function of Bailus? Or is it a function of what we're now going to call Matzeh? Maybe we'll define Matzeh. Even this, we'll have to define. How do you reach the state of Matzeh? Bailus, we know. It's quantified in Halacha. You own something, you don't. How do you reach the stage of Matzeh? Is it location? Is it optics? Remember, we'll talk about seeing Chametz. We'll see that later. Is it worrying about it? So we'll start to see what creates Matzeh. But this is our question. What's the categorical definition? And we saw the Gemara in Vav Amud Beis of Ki'ilu Hein Bershusa. Remember, Bor and Chametz you don't really own, but it's Ki'ilu Hein Bershusa. What does that mean? Hashem may gave you Bailus, even though it's non-standard Bailus. Or it means that you violate Bai Rabbi Yamatzeh, even though you don't own it because you're associated with it. Or in a parallel, Rava and Daf Hei Amud Beis told the people in Mechoza, get rid of the chametz you're watching for the Gentile soldiers, because you're going to have to pay for it. Kidilchon dami. Okay? And the first nafka mina we talked about, which is really this whole question, what about chametz that you don't own, that you're mekabel achrayut? Why do you violate by Rabbi Yimatzeh? Because achrayut conveys or endows ownership, whereas achrayut generates association. Okay? First nafka mina. Why are you chayev by Rabbi Amatzai on chameis that you took achrayot? Listen carefully. What level of achrayot would be necessary to contain or constitute a violation of Rabbi Amatzai? Limited liability or only thorough liability? Before I delineate and specify, can anyone massage this? Why would I say any liability whatsoever would constitute a violation of my right? I've got a guy. I've got Muhammad. I agree to watch his chametz. I can agree to watch the chametz with limited liability, or I can agree to watch the chametz with extended liability for everything. The Gemara says that I violate by Rabbi Matzeh if I agree to watch Muhammad's chametz. We'll see some Rishonim say even with limited liability. Others Rishonim say only with extensive liability. What would you say? If liability creates bailus, and that's why you violate by Rabbi Matzeh, would it be limited liability or thorough liability that would create bailus, that would lead to by Rabbi Matzeh? Can anyone connect the two questions? Let's try from the other side. Sometimes it pays from the other side. If liability generates Bali Rabbi Matze, not because it generates Bailus, which is the heart of Bali Rabbi Matze, it just creates association, and association is enough to make Bali Rabbi Matze. Would limited liability be enough to create association, or you need thorough liability? Anyone? Limited, right. Anytime I'm somewhat invested in this chametz, I'm associated with it, I worry about it, I'm connected to it, we define it. Whereas if we're trying to generate not association and connection and linkage to the chametz, but, oh, the fact that I'm liable means I own it, maybe I can only be called an owner if I'm chayv for everything, not if I'm chayv for a few things. Anyone know how many shomrim there are? Anyone study shomrim? There are four. But arba shomrim hem v'din hem shlosha. There are really only three different tables of liability. There's a shomer chinam, there's a shomer sachar, and there's a shoel. A socher, we're not sure whether he's a shomer chinam or shomer sachar, it's a machlokes tanaim. So tell me, what's the chiyuv of shomer chinam? Limited liability. If you're not getting paid, you're chayav for? Yeah? Gross negligence, called pshia. Basically, you let the animal walk down Fifth Avenue in the middle of traffic. You expose the animal to coronavirus. You let the animal run around with lions. Like really, really grossly negligent and derelict behavior. But if someone stole the animal got lost because it ran away, or certainly an act of nature, you know, natural disaster, and it's your pater. The opposite end of the spectrum is who's chayav for everything, you know? No, Shem Sachar is in the middle. I'm specifically choosing the poles. Sure. So if I borrow something, then I'm chayav for everything. If I borrow your axe or your car, I don't care whether I'm grossly negligent, it gets stolen, even if a natural accident happens, you got me. There's only one case where Shoah was pater. You know the case? Very interesting halacha. It's called Meita Machmat Mulacha. If I borrow something and it breaks while I'm using it, then I said, look, you know, you gave it to me to use. That's what you gave it to me. But everything else is Shoah's chayav. So we have the two extremes, Shomer Chinam, limited liability, Shoel, almost comprehensive liability, and in the middle is the Shomer Sachar. Shomer Sachar is chayav for pshia, negligence, Gineva Aveda, stealing, theft, or getting lost, but he's not chayav for obviously. So it's a slow step up. Shomer Chinam, most limited. Shoel, most comprehensive. Shomer Sachar, somewhat in the middle. Now let's see who says what. So let's take a look at Tosfos, source number 7, with this we'll end. It says Tosfos and Shavuos of all places. Tosfos and Shavuot happens to be referencing our Gemara. Tosfos says, "V'hashda ha derminon source 7 parakamid ipsachim kavei chametz kiven dilu mignav o misvid b'shusaychul kami kiditchul dami haynu." Remember, Rava told the people in the town of Mechoza that you have to pay for the food if it gets stolen or lost. He meant afilo line number 3 misvis bionis. Right, in that case, it sounds like the Persian army wasn't going to be nice to the Jews. The Persian army said, look, I don't care what happens. If rats eat the chametz, or if a flood comes and takes the chametz, or some, Attila the Hun, you know, comes and takes the chametz, I don't care. If you lose the food that we've deposited in your house to cook for us, you have to pay for it. So it sounds like, at least according to Tosfos, those poor Jews of Mechoza were really behind the battle. They were completely obligated across the board for everything. Tosfos says, the end of line number 7, source number 7, third line, the Lomachai Bonson. if we're not talking about someone that has comprehensive liability, even for ones, afilu mechayev b'gneiva v'aveda, ein zakak levayer. What, the fact that I'm chayev to cover negligence and gneiva v'aveda means that I'm chayev and buy your off for your chametz? What does that mean? Oh, if I'm chayev for everything for your chametz, if it dies, if a natural disaster, if a tidal wave comes, if a tsunami comes, okay, then I basically own it. Because I'm chayev no matter what happens. Like those poor Jews of Mechuzah, according to Tosfos. So the poor Jews of Mechuzah, they were chayev for that chametz no matter what, so you know what, you own it. Contrast that with the Rush. Rush, source 6. This is in our Gemara Pesachim. Yesh, we'll read just the end. I'll give you the polarities. Ubehag. Who is the Behag? What is the name? What does the acronym stand for? Baal Halachas Gedolos, one of the Geonim, probably on the 9th century. The tradition suggested it was someone named Mar Yehud Darigon, one of the earliest halachic collections. However, most of modern research has shown, and this is what much of the Torah world accepts also, it was written by one of the, I don't think it was a Gaon, but it was a big Talmud Chacham, the Gaon in period. The period on about 100 years difference, Reb Shimon Kayara. It was a different one of the Gaonim. But it's one of the earliest halachic works after the Gemara to try to condense the Gemara to easy to read halachic snippets. So the Behag, which is quoted by the Rush, Kasav, line number 3, source 6, the Afilu, Shomer Chinam Nami. That if I'm Muhammad, Shomer Chinam on his chametz, and I'm really not chayev for anything except for Pshia, that's enough to make me chayev for Bali Rabbi Matze on chametz, which I don't own, that I'm watching for Muhammad. Namely, we have a polar machlokas between the Behag, quoted by the Rashi and Pesachim, and Tosfos and Shavuos. Look at that. You have to bring together Sozos and Makor HaShas. Tosfos in Shavuos says, you know what type of liability constitutes Bayer Abayim Matzah and Chametz you don't own? Only complete, comprehensive, maximum liability. Only if you're Chayiv and Onsim. And Tosfos assumes that the Jews in Mechuzah were Chayiv for Onsim, which he doesn't know. That's his assumption. The Bahag says, no. Anytime that I'm even partially, limitedly liable for your Chametz, you meaning a Goy Chametz, I'm Chayiv for Bayer Abayim Matzah. Now, the Rush and Tosfos don't tell us this issue. Listen, we're going to end with this. This is a really important part of Lumbus. Rush doesn't say, is Bayra a function of Bailus or association? Tosfos doesn't say, but can I interpret their statement about the scope of Achrayus and reverse engineer what they held about the nature of why Achrayus chay Bayra Bailus? Can I say, you know why Tosfos and Shavuos felt that only radical Achrayus makes you chay Bayra Bailus? Because Tosfos felt like this. That Achrayus creates Bailus, and it's Bailus is at the heart of Bayer Abayim Matzah. And you know what type of Achrayus creates Bailus? Only complete Achrayus creates Bailus. So can I say that Tosfos held this? And can I say that the Behag said that even limited liability creates enough Achrayus for Bayer Abayim Matzah, even low-scale liability of Shemachinim, because he held, you know what creates Bayer Abayim Matzah? Not Bailus, but association. And as long as I have to do a little bit of investing in your chametz and watch it against gross negligence, then I'm associated with your chametz. You see how we're making the Rishonim talk? Lumbus is ventriloquy. You want to make the Rishonim say things that they knew intuitively they didn't have to say. When the Bahag told his Talmidim limited liability, he meant to tell them, and everyone in the room knew Torah so well, oh, you know why our Rebbe, Mar Yehud Darigon, is saying the limited liability creates? Because he holds its association, even limited liabilities. He didn't have to say it. And when whoever that tells us, I think it's the Re in Shavuos, right? It's the Re in Shavuos. I don't know if it's the Re, wherever the Tosfos was in Shavuos, when he told us that meet him in France in the 12th century, 13th century, oh, you need complete liability. You know why? Because everyone in the room knew it was clear, everyone in the room. Oh, this Rebbe, our French Rebbe, Tosfos, wherever it was, he held that Achrayus creates ownership. Ownership is at the heart of by Rabbi Matzeh. You can only have ownership if you have complete Achrayus. And everyone was able to intuit what people were saying in nanoseconds because they knew Torah like you know, fill in the blanks. Whatever you know intuitively, I don't have to explain. If I say Amazon, let's say, or whatever I'll say to you that you are so immersed in that you know the ins and outs intuitively, that's how well they knew Torah. So Lumbus isn't creating a new way to view. It's just recreating a process that happens so quickly because they knew it intuitively. And it's language and methodology to help unpack a process that if you go back 800 years and you are able to know Torah as well as they know it, it was just everyone in the room was interpreting the sign language intuitively because they just knew Shas that well. Okay, so we're going to stop here. we're going to start to build our table. We'll get into more complicated cases to help us decide what is by Rabbi Yamatze a function of. Is it a function of ownership or even association? We'll see how the Rishonim continue to evolve this question. Okay? Again, I apologize about the delay. I left on time, but the car was not ready. Okay? Shabbat shalom, everyone. Shabbat shalom. Right, so you're assuming